Morning, everyone. Today's daf is Bava Metzia, daf Samech Dalet. We are holding at the top of Samech Dalet, Amud Aleph, on the first line, Amar Le Rav Acha, Bar Yehuda Rava Le Rav Ashi. The Gemara today is going to continue the discussion of Rav Nachman's statement that if somebody borrows money and they find more money in the sum than they were expecting, what the rules are exactly for when that was a mistake that the lender made or when it was assumed to be a gift that the lender was giving to the borrower. And the Gemara is going to have discussions along those lines. It's also going to continue discussing forward contracts and when you can make forward contracts, when you cannot. And then the Gemara in Amud Beis is going to discuss certain things that you should not do if you borrowed from a person, certain things that the lender should not do because it may make it look like interest. If he's getting a certain benefit from the borrower in addition to the loan that's being paid, then that additional benefit may be considered like ribis. So the Gemara will discuss things that you should not do. So we're picking up with the discussion of Rav Nachman, where if you remember, Rav Nachman had told us that if you borrow money from someone and you find that there's a mistake in the amount of money, that it's different from what you were expecting, in increments of 10 or 5, that would be assumed to be a mistake because likely they were counting by 5s, by 10s, and they just messed up the count. So that type of money you would have to return. But if the mistake is in a different type of increment, then we assume that it's a gift, and you could keep that money. So the Gemara is going to discuss instances where maybe you can assume that it's a gift, and maybe you should have to return it, even if the mistake is off by an increment different from 5 or 10. Just something interesting I saw this morning in the top Tosfos on the page on Samach Dalet Amud Aleph, where the Gemara had discussed that if the mistake is by an increment of 5 or 10, then that would be considered to be a mistake. So Tosfos just points out, Hemayu regilin b'chamisha kederech sha'anu monin echad echad. And the times of the Gemara, apparently they used to often count by 5s or 10s, the same way that we often count by 1s. Since we always count by 1s, then any mistake is going to be considered likely a mistake and not a gift, because you would always mess up a count of 1. Every sum amounts by 1. Every number is divisible by 1. So just something interesting, maybe that changed from the times of the Gemara to already the times of Tosfos. They used to count by 5s and 10s, and therefore mistakes like that were mistakes for us. Any mistake seemingly would be a mistake. So let's pick up the top line. Amar le Rav Acha Bar Yehuda Rava le Rav Ashi. Amar le Rav Acha Bar Yehuda Rava le Rav Ashi. V'inish takifehu delo yoiv matana. My, we just established that if there's a mistake by an increment of 5 or 10, then that's a mistake, but if not, probably it's a gift. So says Rav Acha Bar Yehuda Rava le Rav Ashi, what happens if the lender is a really strong person, a really scary person who doesn't give gifts? Then
you should probably give it back under any circumstances.
Right, you should probably
no matter what the mistake is, you know, 5 cents, singles, just give it back.
Even if he's it's a gift, you don't want to accept it, because who knows, maybe he'll beat you up. But yeah, so let's say you have a mistake by an increment of 3. Generally, we would assume that's a gift. But if the guy is really strong, he doesn't give gifts. If he's really scary, he doesn't give gifts. So how could you just assume that it's a gift? So Amar Lei, Dilma Migzel Guzle Be'ivla Lei Be'cheshbon. You're right, maybe he's not giving you a gift, but he's a scary guy. He probably stole from you at some point. So maybe he stole from you, and now he decided to do tshuva, and he's returning the theft to you. And he just included that in the loan that he gave you. He stole 3 from you, which we would have assumed is a gift. With this guy, we can't assume it's a gift when he gives you 3 extra over the loan. But maybe he's just returning the 3 that he stole at some point, and he's including that in with the loan that he's giving
you. Just curious. Nowadays, if people give more money in cash, the intention, I would think, is that they did not mean it to add into the gift. But not, those days, it was assumed that there was a possibility that they were.
Right.
So it's a change of the way people...
If it's your uncle, then it's a gift.
Yeah.
Maybe.
I think already based on Tosfos, because we always count in intervals of 1, so we're going to assume that everything is a mistake. And you should always be careful, check the money over, check the change that the cashier gives you. At the store,
you know,
and try to return any mistakes.
If your wife asks you for $20 and you give her 30, what is that?
It's in lieu of flowers.
I'm sorry?
It's in lieu of flowers.
It's for the flowers you didn't get her when you're on her birthday.
Exactly.
But she said thank you, I guess. Give ten too much.
So we're going to assume that if this scary person gives you extra money, probably he stole from you and he's returning from you. Why would he do that? Because we have a brisa which says something along those lines. The brisa says that if somebody steals from his friend and he returns it to him in a larger sum of money without specifying, here's the theft I'm returning to you, but he just gives it back to him as part of a larger sum, yatsa, he has fulfilled his obligation to return the theft. So it's possible that if you have a scary guy, maybe it is sort of a matana, not that he's giving to you as a gift, but he's returning the theft.
So you don't, have to notify him that you stole.
It sounds like not. Yeah. Well, we had a machlokas Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Shmuel. Right. So you're saying this sounds like Rabbi Shmuel.
There's a base here. There's a base.
But we paskin. We didn't paskin like Rabbi Akiva, did we? We paskin like Rabbi Shmuel. If you turn back to Mem Gimel and Beis, so the Gemara said there was a debate halacha Rabbi Akiva leolam, which would have included that case.
When it's one-on-one,
right, that's true. So probably we should pass in like Rabbi Akiva.
But he said you have to notify them, right?
Right, he said you have to notify them. But here this seems to be like Rabbi Shmuel. Yeah. Maybe there's a difference between... That was talking about cases of Shomrim, right? Cases of Shomrim, if you're machzir...
It's Gazel.
No, it's cases of
It's Gazel.
Yeah, no, you're right.
Heshem is Gazel.
Right, so you have to figure out exactly, yeah, how to square those off. This sounds more like Rabbi Shmuel.
Yeah.
Okay, interesting. So it says more further, let's say you have a person that you've never met before. You've never done any business with him. There's no reason that he should ever give you a gift. And now he comes and he lends you money and he makes a mistake by an increment of different from 5 or 10, less or more than 5 or 10, so let's say 3. It's unlikely that he's giving you a gift because you've never met him before. Why would he want to give you a gift out of nowhere? So how can you just assume that it's a gift? So Amar Lei, Dilma Inish Acharina Gazlei. Okay, so maybe it's true that this guy isn't going to give him a gift, but maybe some other guy stole from you, the Amar Lei, Ki Yazif Ploni Pshiti Minach, and he said to this new guy that you've never met before that just came from nowhere, maybe he said to that guy, when you lend money to the other person, Ivalei Becheshben, take my theft that I need to return to him, and include that in the sum of money that you're going to give him as a loan. So even if it's someone you never met, and we wouldn't assume that it's a gift, it's still possible that it's the theft that somebody else is returning to you. So that would cover the cases of Rav Nachman, even when there seem to be circumstances where you can assume that a mistake is a gift, there might be other reasons to be told that it's not a mistake, and you're still allowed to keep the money. So that concludes the discussion of Rav Nachman. Now, says more further, Amar Rav Kahana.
Is there a difference if it's a milva b'peh or a milva b'shtar?
Let's say it out. It sounds like you're saying if it's a milva b'shtar, then it seems more likely that it's a mistake if it deviates from the number that was promised in the shtar. Is that right?
Well, I know you have Adam there. We're in the salva, right?
Right. But so I'm saying, what's the question? The question is, if there's a mistake, let's say by 3.
Why are we talking about halva here? Who mentioned halva?
Rav Nachman's case is Haimanda Ozif Pshiti Mechavre, one who borrows money from his friend, right? So I don't know. What I would imagine, if there's a chiluk between the two, it might be more likely that it's a gift if it's a milva al peh. Whereas if it's a milva b'shtar, you have witnesses testifying to the amount that was given as a loan, then we can't accept a deviation from that amount. That's my initial thoughts. I'm not sure if there's a difference or not. I didn't see anybody who speaks about it. But certainly possible. So it says more further, Amar Rav Kahana, Havei Yativna B'shili Pirki D'Rav. I was sitting in the shir of Rav, the Shamas de Ka'amar Kari Kari. And I heard that he kept talking about gourds. He was screaming about gourds. I had no idea what he was talking about. But lo yadan in my Ka'amar. I didn't know what he was saying.
B'shili Pirki. It was at the end of... In other words, he missed the...
Right. Rashi says, B'shili Pirki, Kishsiyam Lidrosh, Bati, Velo Shamati, Tchilis Tabar. He came at the end of the shir. He didn't hear the beginning of what Rav was saying. And he heard that he was screaming about gourds. He had no idea what was going on. So Batar de Kam Rav, after Rav got up from the shir and left, Amri Lahu, Rav Kahana said to the rest of the students who were at the shir of Rav, my kari kari, the Kama Rav. What was Rav talking about with all these gourds? I had no idea what was going on. I couldn't follow. So Amri Lee, all the students in the shir of Rav, said to Rav Kahana, Hachi Kama Rav, this is what Rav was saying. That Haiman de Yaiv Zuzi Ligina, let's say somebody gives money to a gardener, a kari, as payment for gourds in advance, the Ka'azli Asara Kari B'nei Zerta, and at the time, the way gourds were being sold were that people were selling bundles of 10 gourds, each of which was a half an amma in length. So a person paid the gardener for these gourds in advance. The Amar Lei and the gardener said to the person who was buying them that in the future, Yahivna Lecha Bnei Garmidi, that I'm going to give you gourds which are twice the size in length. I'm going to give you 10 gourds, not that are half an amma, but 10 gourds that are a full amma. So essentially he's promising him more than the payment would have been worth at the current time. So then the rule is the same rule that we've seen in the last couple of dapim until now, that isnehu shari, if he has those 10 longer gourds, the gourds that are a garmida, that are an amma in length, at the time that he's making this promise, that would be permitted, because we always said if you have the goods in your possession, then it's permitted to make these forward contracts. But less nehu aser, if he doesn't have these longer types of gourds, then it would be prohibited to make such an arrangement. So says the Gemara Pshita. That's obvious. That's the same rule that we've seen until now. What we've seen in the Gemara is, when the Gemara asks Pshita like this, it's saying it's obvious that if you don't have the item, that you can't make such a contract. So what are you telling me? That less nehu aser, that if he doesn't have these longer gourds, that such an arrangement would be forbidden. That should be obvious. We know that based on the rules we've seen until now. So says the Gemara, Ma'u detema, what might you have thought? That maybe even if you don't have these longer gourds at the time that you're making this transaction, still, it's a valid transaction. Why? Because kevan de memela karabu shapir dami. I might think that since the gourds automatically grow, that the gourds that are a half an amma are going to grow in the future to become these gourds that are a full amma, then maybe it would be permitted to make such an arrangement, even though you don't have the larger gourds. Kamash malan, therefore, Rav was teaching this statement in the shir to tell us that that's not okay. That even if the gourds are going to grow in the future, since you don't have the larger gourds that you need right now, at the time that you're making this arrangement, it would be forbidden. So ask Gemara Kiman, who is that ruling like? That's Kihaitana. That's like the author of the following Braisa. Titania, as the Braisa says, Haholech lach loves izav. Let's say a person is going to milk his goats, Veligzos esrechelav, or to shear his sheep, Velirdos eskavarto, or to remove the honey from his beehive. Matsu chavero ve'amrlo, and his friend finds him and says, Mashe izai cholvos macherlcha, that which my goats are going to milk, that which I'm going to milk for my goats, is sold to you, to this friend that he just found. Or mashe rechelai gozezos macherlcha, that which my sheep are going to shear, the shearings that I'm going to remove from the sheep, should be sold to you. Or mashe kaverti rode macherlcha, that which my beehive is going to remove, the honey that I'm going to remove from my beehive, that would be mutter. If you're selling everything, we'll see it in Rashi, if you're selling everything that these products would produce, that would be permitted. It says Rashi, Dibra Maschlo Mutter, it's like sort of the last fourth or third in the Rashi towards the bottom. Mutter, why are such arrangements permitted? Sharei kiba alav hefsid viskar, because the friend is accepting to buy the entire quantity that these items are going to produce, whether it be the milk of the goats or the shearing of the sheep or the honey of the beehive, whether it increases in value or whether it decreases in value. Hilkach afilu yimse yoter mishabe hadamim, and therefore, even if he ends up getting more honey or more milk or more shearings than he paid for at the time that this arrangement was made, inkan agar naturle, that's not an issue of ribis, generally speaking, but that's not an issue of receiving reward for giving payment in advance. Because you're agreeing to take the entire quantity that's produced, even if a lesser quantity had been produced, and therefore it would basically be ribbis, ribbis doesn't really work that way, I don't think, but ribbis on the seller's part, that the seller would be getting more money than he's actually delivering the goods, sort of more of an onah. The question is, how does onah work with advance payment? I'm not sure exactly how we classify that. So it's not a prohibition of ribbis, because if it had been less, you also would have taken the lesser amount. So when you stand to potentially benefit, like, but also to lose out, that's not ribbis.
In the diamond business, they used to send these boxes from South Africa. Everyone had to pay a fixed amount for a box. And you didn't know what was in the box. You know, sometimes it was very valuable stuff, and sometimes it wasn't valuable stuff.
All trust.
It's all on trust. Yeah. And since nothing was specified, since no amounts were specified, I think it's like our case.
Yeah.
It's permissible.
Right.
The buyer assumed the loss on himself.
Yeah.
What's the comparison? There you had the box right in front of you. Here your stuff.
But all you see is a box.
Okay, but the goods are there. You're talking about stuff that isn't even here yet.
It's diamonds, you know. There are diamonds and there are diamonds. There are diamonds of high quality, there are diamonds of low quality. But you didn't know what you were getting.
But that's the case of Yeshlo. Here's the case of they're not here in this world.
These are small gourds comparable to diamonds of a lesser quality. And bigger gourds are comparable to diamonds of a higher quality.
Right. Yeah.
And they're not going to change. You know, the lesser quality diamonds are going to remain lesser quality.
Right. So yeah, our case is that you're uncertain exactly how much you're going to get, but you're accepting to buy the entire quantity, whether it be the appropriate quantity for what you paid, or more or less. So that would be permitted, because even if you get more, it's not necessarily ribbis, you could have gotten less. But if the seller who just found this friend on the street says, that which my goat's milk, the milk that I removed from my goats, at set quantity, at X quantity is sold to you, but it's going to be exactly that much, no more and no less. Or Masha Rechelai goes and says, Kach b'kach mocherlach. Or that which my sheep shear, the shearings that I removed from my sheep are sold to you, but at a set amount. Or Masha Kaverti ro de kach b'kach mocherlach. That which my beehive removes honey, the honey that I removed from the beehive, is sold to you at X quantity. That's prohibited. That's usur. Ve'af agav de memela karabu came under lesnu ba'ishaita usur. Even though the shearings or the milk or the honey is automatically going to grow, so to speak, it's automatically going to come, since the person selling it doesn't have the quantity at the time that he's making the sale, it would be prohibited. And that would be the same as what Rav had said by the gourds, that even though the gourds that are half an amma are going to grow to become a full amma, if you don't have the full amma gourds at the time that you're making this arrangement, then it would be prohibited. If we just look, yeah.
This says this is a cheap price.
At a cheap price, right. So Rashi, I was just about to point to, if you look in the next Rashi that we had seen, we saw Dibur Masal Mutter, so the next one, Ava Amr Lo Kach Bekach Sayin, the Ozil Gabe Bishar Hakdamas Hamos, Aser. If you're making this condition where you're selling a set quantity, but you're selling it at a cheaper price than it really would be worth right now, because the person is paying you in advance, he's paying you right at this moment, that would be Aser. So when you stand to benefit or to lose, depending on what happens to the honey or the milk or the shearings, that would be permitted. But when you're buying a set quantity in advance and you're getting it at a cheaper price because of your advance payment, that's usur, even though that quantity is automatically going to come in the future, since you don't have it at the current time, that would be usur, and that fits perfectly with what Rav was saying by the gourds. So that's one statement that Rav may have been saying in his shir about the gourds. But Iga Damri, another version is that Amarava came in the Mimela Karabu, Shapir Dami. That Rava says, really, if you make an advance payment for the gourds, and you don't have the larger gourds at the time that you're making this arrangement, since they'll automatically grow from half an amma to a full amma, it's permitted to make such an arrangement, even though you don't have the gourds in your possession. So ask Gemara, Va'atanya, kach v'kach aser. But we just had this braisa which said, if you're selling a specific quantity, and you're selling it at a cheaper price in advance, and you don't have the item in your possession, you don't have the honey, you don't have the milk, you don't have the shearings, then that's aser. So that fit perfectly with the way Rav's first statement was presented. But now that we have this second version, where even though you don't have the gourds, it's okay, how does that fit with the braisa, which says you need to have them in your possession? So says Gemara, the cases aren't comparable at all. Hatam lav minei karabu. In the case of milk or honey or shearings, they're not growing from the original items that you do have in your possession at the time. The shakli lelahai va'ati acharin b'duchte. If you take the items that you have now and remove them, new ones are going to grow. So for example, let's say you milk the goats in advance. If you come back to the goats in however long, there's going to be new milk that they're in the possession. The milk doesn't grow, the animal just produces new milk. Or similarly, the shearings, I think the shearings example is probably the closest to the gourds, but you could understand it in the following way, that if you remove the shearings of the goat, new shearings will grow in their place. Now, obviously, if you don't remove the shearings, we do assume that hair grows, and the same piece of wool, the same piece of shearings are going to grow to be larger, but you could say that the half that is going to grow is different from the half that's already attached. But regardless, if you remove the shearings from the animal, new shearings will grow. Or similarly, if you remove the honey from the beehive, new honey will emerge in its place. But hacha minei karabu, in the case of the gourds, the larger gourd actually grows from the smaller gourd. Dechishakli lelahai lo'ati acharini biduchte. If you remove the half an amma gourd, a new gourd is not going to emerge in its place. That you only have, let's say, 10 gourds that could have been produced from the plant that you have. And if you remove those 10, you're not going to get 10 new ones. So the cases aren't comparable. The reason in this new statement of Rav attributed to Rava, that even if you don't have the 10 amma gourd, the 10 gourds that are an amma long at the time that you're making this arrangement, it's fine because the half amma gourds are going to grow to be the full amma gourds. That's okay. And that doesn't contradict the braisa, which said that you can't make such an arrangement with milk or honey or shearings, because milk, honey, and shearings don't actually grow from the original products. They just emerge as new products. But gourds actually grow from the smaller gourds, and therefore, even if you don't have them in your possession, it's permitted to make such an arrangement because we assume they will automatically grow. So that's basically the discussion of forward contracts. Now, Amar Abaye says Abaye, Shari le le'inish le'memer le'lechavre, heilach arba azuzi, achavisa dechamra. Says Abaye, a person is permitted to say to his friend, take these four coins, take these four zuz as payment for this barrel of wine. Itakva birshuscha. If the barrel of wine spoils, then it's going to be in your possession, that you have to deal with the loss of the spoiling of the wine. But yekara izila, if the barrel of wine either increases in price or decreases in price, then birshusi, that I'm accepting that risk or potential reward upon myself, and the wine will be in my possession if something like that happens. So Amar le Rav Sharvaya la Abaye, says Rav Sharvaya to Abaye, hai karov l'schar b'rachok lehefsidhu. How is that permitted? That is considered karov l'schar b'rachok lehefsid. The person is basically making himself close for reward and distant for loss. Basically, heads I win, tails you lose. What Rav Sharvaya is saying to Abaye is, how is such an arrangement permitted? We're going to see later on in the Gemara, Daf Ayin Amud Aleph, that making an arrangement of Karav L'Schar V'Rachuk L'Hesed is not permitted. Now, what exactly do we mean by that? Let's say a person says, if there's upside, if there's reward, then I receive that reward, I receive that upside, the benefit. But if there's a loss, then I'm distancing myself from that and I'm not accepting it. So how is this stipulation made by the selling of the barrel of wine like that? Because the person is saying, if the barrel of wine spoils, then I'm not accepting that risk. You're going to accept that. So that would be rachok lehefsid, something bad, a loss is happening to the barrel of wine, and he's not accepting it upon himself. But then he's also karav l'schar, because if the barrel of wine increases in value, he's going to be the one who stands to benefit from that. So says Rav Sharvaya, how could you, Abaye, tell me that such a statement is permissible? That seems to violate the Gemara that we're going to have in just six blah. On Daf Ayin Amud Aleph, Karav L'Schar B'Rachuk L'Hefsid should be prohibited. So Amar Leh responds Abaye to Rav Sharvaya, Kevin the Mekabel Alei Zula Karav L'Zeh U'L'Zehu. Says Abaye, no. Since the person is accepting upon himself the decrease in value of the barrel of wine, if it just decreases in value, not if it spoils, but if it just happens to decrease in price, since he's accepting that risk upon himself, then it's considered Karav L'Zeh U'L'Zeh. It's as if he's making himself close for both benefit and loss. He's making himself close that if the price increases, he benefits from that. He's also making himself close that if the price decreases in value, he loses from that. The only thing he's not accepting upon himself is if the wine spoils, then he would not have responsibility for that. And that's considered karov lezeh lezeh. That's considered karov l'schar v'karov l'hefsed, which is permissible. So that's the end of Abaye's discussion regarding making such stipulations. Now the mission is going to go on to discuss the topic we mentioned in the beginning about certain things that a lender should not do as a benefit from the borrower when he has an outstanding loan, because that would constitute interest. And in this discussion, the Gemara is going to discuss something we've seen a few times now already, going back to Baba Kama, about Zene Nevezeh Chaser, Zene Nevezeh Lo Chaser, somebody living in someone else's courtyard. So says the Mishnah, Hamal Ve'es Chavero, let's say a person lends money to his friend, Lo Yodur B'chatzero Chinam, he shouldn't live in the friend's courtyard for free. He also should not rent something from the friend at a cheaper price than the normal rental price. Because both of these cases would constitute interest, would constitute ribbis. If, in addition to the loan, you're not only going to get paid back for the loan, but you're also going to get free rent living in the person's courtyard. Or similarly, if you're going to get to borrow something at a cheaper price than most other people would, that would obviously be a benefit to you. And that seems to be a benefit that you're getting for the fact that you lent him money, the fact that he gets to use your money, so that would be prohibited.
Is there a time limit on this, or is this like forever and ever?
I would assume for the duration of the loan.
That's it?
You're saying, let's say he comes
back. I wasn't
back
thinking it was that short. I was thinking, you know, it was a reasonable time.
Right, so the question is, yeah, how long should it
how
be?
Long
I don't know.
Less? 50, you know, 25 years later, you can't get a cup of flour from somebody.
I mean, especially, let's just say that you lent to him multiple times. No. So it should be clear that once you've lent to him the second time, the benefit you're getting is at least for the second loan, not the first loan, right? So if we've already cut off that loan.
But let's say it was just one loan.
The
mission said I'm out of it.
Yeah,
One-time
loan. I wouldn't assume that it means forever. Yeah, Rudy,
where you had the Gemara before that says if you gave the Malva a present before or after the loan was paid back, so at least that was
right. Mutter. That's it. No. That was Akdamas Ribis and Ribis Mulcheres.
But it wasn't Katsutsu, where you didn't stipulate
it's Ribbis Rabbanan. No, it's Ribbis Rabbanan. You know, all these cases are Ribbis Rabbanan.
Yeah, so I'm not sure. I didn't see anyone who speaks about it. Definitely interesting.
It seems a little harsh that it should be forever.
Yeah, I wouldn't assume it'd be forever. The question is, what exactly is the timeline? So what's the timeline? Is it a year? I don't know. Is it less? Yeah. I'm not sure. That's just the question. Yeah. So it says the Gemara, Amar Rav Yosef Bar Manyumi, Amar Rav Nachman. Rav Yosef Bar Manyumi reports in the name of Rav Nachman that Afo Pisha Amru Hadar Bechatzer Chaveiro Shalom Midaito Eino Tzarech La'alos Loschar. Even though Chazal taught us that if one lives in his friend's courtyard without the friend's knowledge that he's living there, you don't have to pay him. You don't have to give him any payment for living there. If you lend money to your friend and then you live in your friend's courtyard, then you do have to give money to the friend whose courtyard you're staying in. Because essentially, even though you could have just stayed in his courtyard for free if you didn't know about it, in a case where you lent him money, if you just live in his courtyard for free, that would constitute ribis. So you have to make sure to pay him, because otherwise you'll be in violation of ribis. So ask Gemara Mike Mash Malan, what's that statement of Rav Yosef Bar Manyumi in the name of Rav Nachman teaching us? Tanina, we have that explicitly in our Mishnah right here, which said that Hamalve et Chaveiro lo yodor bechatzeiro chinam lo yizisko mimenu bepachos mipnei shehu ribis. The Mishnah said that if one lends money to his friend, he shouldn't live in his courtyard for free, and he also shouldn't rent from him at a cheaper price, because that constitutes interest. So that seems to be exactly the statement of Rav Yosef Bar Manyumi Amar Rav Nachman, and therefore what is he teaching us by making this statement?
Even if he would have allowed, we're saying even if you're allowed to do this without the loan, you can't do it with the loan.
Right. Even if you're allowed to do it without the loan, you can't do it with the loan. Yeah. So answer to the Gemara, imi masnisen, if we only have this Mishnah here in Bava Metzia, which tells you not to do this, hava amina hani mili b'chatzer dekaima le'egra v'gaber the oven the meyer. I might think that the only time that the lender cannot stay in the house, in the courtyard of the friend for free, is if it's a courtyard that generally would be rented, and the lender is someone who would generally need to rent somewhere to stay, right? That's what we would call zenene v'zechoser. The lender is benefiting because normally he needs to find somewhere to stay, and now he's just staying in the friend's courtyard for free. So that would be zenene. And it's also zechoser. The owner of the courtyard is losing out because generally he would rent out this courtyard, but now he's not able to rent it because somebody else is living there for free. So you might think that only in a case of zenene v'zechoser, which we would say is the most extreme case, where both guys have some financial interest in this case, the owner of the courtyard is losing out, and the person staying in the courtyard is benefiting. So maybe only there the Mishnah prohibits a lender to stay in the courtyard of the person to whom he lent. Avachatzer de lo kaima le'egra, v'gabra de lo abid le'megar. But let's say you have the other extreme case of zelonene v'zelochaser, where you have a courtyard which is not generally rented out, and you have a guy who generally does not rent space to stay, in which case the guy is not benefiting at all because he doesn't normally rent a place, so that's zelonene. And the owner of the courtyard is also not losing out, zelochaser, because he normally doesn't lend out his courtyard. So emelo, I would think that maybe there's no issue of a lender staying in the courtyard of the borrower. Kamash Malan, therefore, I have the statement of Rabbi Yosef Bar Manyumi, Amar Rav Nachman, to tell us that the prohibition against the lender staying in the courtyard of the borrower still applies in such a case. So according to the Mishnah, it applies when the courtyard is normally rented out and the lender normally rents a place to stay. But according to Rabbi Yosef Bar Manyumi, Amar Rav Nachman, it applies even when the courtyard is not generally rented out and even when the guy generally does not need to rent a place to stay.
It would seem that if it was a pre-existing arrangement, pre-existing to the loan, where this guy stayed on the premises of the owner of the chatzer, that it should also be allowed even after the loan.
Right. A pre-existing arrangement where he's staying for pay?
No, he stays for free. If they already have an existing situation,
yeah,
friends, it would seem that could go on despite the fact of
right.
The loan.
Yeah, I hear that possibility. Yeah. Right, because then it could be understood clearly as not being ribis. It's clearly a separate benefit. Right. Yeah. But again, it gets back into the question a little bit, like what's the time frame
look
for
like,
all these
does
things?
It look like ribis? Or sometimes the Gemara objects to something because it looks like ribis.
Right. Well, I think this objection here, if you look in Rashi, the Kamash Malan, on the statement of Rav Yosef Bar Manyumi Amar Rav Nachman, the Kamash Malan, the statement is Mechazik ribis. Yeah. So if he's saying that even this looks like ribis, so you could extrapolate from there that
maybe
let's say
that
Moshe's case where they had pre-existing conditions, maybe that does not look like ribis. Only if this arrangement happens right after the loan, then it looks like ribis. But if there's a pre-existing arrangement, then maybe it doesn't look like ribis.
Well,
however, no, maybe it also
what
applies.
What was the halacha about renting out your house during Shlosh Regalim?
Couldn't rent it. couldn't take rent.
Yes.
In Yerushalayim.
Yeah. In Yerushalayim.
Yeah.
So if you lend money,
If you lend money to someone who's a resident in Yerushalayim, can you stay in his house?
Then I think for sure, right?
Then, yeah, that's halacha.
Like, right, that's halacha. Just like you can't. Yeah. And that was interesting, right? We have a promise that...
That's a pre-existing condition. That's a pre-existing arrangement.
Do you know anybody nowadays that has an apartment in Yerushalayim and that doesn't rent it out?
We have a promise, though, that if you stay in Yerushalayim, then nothing's going to happen to your property, right?
Nothing's going to happen to property that you left
right. back home. But your property in Yerushalayim, people just are just going to come and squat. Yeah, we just read that. Exactly. Okay, beautiful. So that's that first discussion about living in the borrower's courtyard. Now, Ikeda Amri, another version of the statement, Amar of Yosef Bar Manumi, Amar of Nachman, Afal Pisha Amru Hadar B'chazir Chaver Shalom Midayto Eino Tzarech La'alos L'schar, even though the rabbis taught us that if one lives in the courtyard of his friend without his knowledge, you do not have to pay the owner of the courtyard. Hilveini V'dar B'chazeri Tzarech La'alos L'schar. If a person says to somebody else, lend money to me and live in my courtyard, then you do have to pay the person who owns the courtyard. So what's the difference between this statement and the first statement? The first statement was, Hilvau v'dar b'chatzero. Let's say a person happened to lend money, and then he proceeded from there to live in the courtyard of the friend, of the borrower. But in the second case of Yosef Bar Manumi Amar Nachman, the loan is specifically arranged on the condition that the lender is going to live in the courtyard of the borrower, right? The borrower is specifically saying, Halveini, Bedar, Bechatzeri, lend money to me and live in my courtyard. So in such a case, for sure, Tzarech La'alos L'Schar.
That seems rather obvious.
So the Gemara is going to clarify why we needed both these statements how they relate to each other.
This might be very close to Ribbis Ketzutza.
Right, this seems to already be Ribbis Ketzutza, real bona fide Ribbis. Yeah. So let's see the Rash, the Gemara further. Manda Amar Hilvo, Kol Shekein Halveini. If you teach the statement of Rav Yosef Bar Manumi Amar Rav Nachman in the first case, where they just had a loan outstanding that was made, and then the borrower goes to live in the courtyard of the lender, if that was prohibited, then all the more so it's going to be prohibited when the borrower specifically says to the lender, lend money to me and come live in my courtyard, because that's very clearly making the benefit of staying in the borrower's courtyard like a benefit of the loan, like ribbis, and that would be prohibited. Uman de Amar Halveini, but if you have the second version of Rav Yosef Bar Manumi Amar Rav Nachman, where this arrangement is prohibited when it's specifically arranged from the get-go that the borrower is going to live in the courtyard of the lender is going to live in the courtyard of the borrower, Abal Hilvo, lo. But in the first case, where the loan already was created, and then it just happens to be that the lender is going to stay in the courtyard of the borrower, that would not be problematic. My time, why not? Came in the Meikara, Lavadaita, the Hachi Osfe, late Lanba. Since originally, when he lent money, it was not made on this condition for this arrangement where the lender is going to go stay in the courtyard of the borrower, there would be no problem with it. It's only going to be problematic in a case of Halveini, if you only teach the Halveini statement but not the Hilvo statement, only the second statement but not the first statement. It's only going to be problematic in a case where the loan was made on those terms, on that condition, but it would not be problematic if there was just a loan outstanding and then they followed up on that.
Yeah. So this seems to be even during the term of the loan.
I think during the terms of the loan. But the question is, right, if it applies beyond the term of the loan?
No. During the terms of the loan, he can stay.
Oh, I see the point.
Since he didn't specify it as a condition.
Since he didn't specify, you can even stay during the terms of the loan. Yeah, I misunderstood. I thought you were saying it's prohibited during the terms of the loan. Yeah, that would seem to be correct. What Moshe's pointing out is if you only have the second statement but not the first statement, then if this wasn't arranged as a term of the loan from the get-go, it sounds like it's permitted to stay in the courtyard of the borrower, not just after or before the term of the loan, but even during the term of the loan itself. Since that's not prohibited, it's permitted even during the term of the loan, even though that would seem to clearly look like ribbis, but that mandam or that opinion is going to be okay with such an occurrence. The second ikadamri, I thought also maybe you could say that according to that mandam, he's saying that since the original terms of the loan were not set out in such a way, it would be permitted. So maybe you could also say, like the question that you were asking before, if the original terms of the renting had nothing to do with the loan and they already had this pre-existing arrangement.
Oh, that's for sure. Then it's for sure.
If they had this pre-existing arrangement, then it should be permitted.
Here you see that it was never a part of a quid pro quo.
Right. It was never part of the
loan
itself.
The other way around, you might speculate, was it a quid pro quo? Was it specified as a quid pro quo? But if it was already pre-existing, it's clearly it's not a quibble.
Right, so that's what I would think according to that second Hagamah. Great. Now we have a statement about Rav Yosef Bar Chama. Rav Yosef Bar Chama, Takif Abdi Dinshi, the Masik Behuzuzi, the Abid Behu Abita. Rav Yosef Bar Chama used to grab the servants, the slaves of other people, people who owed him money, and he used to work them. He used to benefit from the slaves as payment for the loan that was owed to him by the slave's owner. So Amalei Rava Berei, Rava, the son of Rav Yosef Bar Chama, asked Rav Yosef Bar Chama, his father, "My time of in Marachi, why are you doing this? Why are you just grabbing the slaves of other people?" So Amalei Anakar of Nachman's Virali. Rav Yosef Bar Chama responded that he assumes like Rav Nachman, the Amar of Nachman, because Rav Nachman said that Avda Noam Kresi Lo Shavi. We assume that a servant is not even worth the value, literally the volume of his stomach. What it means is a servant is not even worth the food that you have to give him as payment sort of for his work.
He eats up more than he produces.
He eats up more than he produces, and it's not worth having a slave around because it's more of a pain to have to feed him than it is the benefit that you get from him. So said Rav Yosef Bar Chama, the reason I'm grabbing these slaves is because I can benefit from them a little bit. They can do work for me, and that can help pay off the debt that the owner of the slave has towards me. And I don't have to worry that that's to the detriment of the owner of the slave, because I know that the owner of the slave doesn't really benefit so much from the slaves as
maybe
it is.
Maybe he was saying, I'm not gaining anything.
He wasn't deducting.
No.
He wasn't deducting.
Maybe he's saying, I'm not gaining anything, because I have to feed him.
But
so there's
if
no
he's
rigors.
Not gaining anything, then how does it help the debt? Isn't he trying to take off value of the debt?
No.
If he was paying off the debt, I think it would be allowed.
But so I don't understand why he's doing it then. If he's not getting anything
he's,
out of
he's
it.
Availing himself.
What do you mean? He's getting somebody to do his laundry for free.
Yeah, but he has to feed him.
He's justifying
his behavior by saying, I don't gain anything by
but
it.
But then he doesn't have to do it specifically to people who owe him money. He could do it to anybody based on that, right?
No, he only did it to people that owed him money.
As a sort of a punishment, meaning it doesn't actually...
Yeah. And only on days when they weren't working for their master.
When they weren't working, yeah.
Yeah. So why was he doing it?
Uh-huh.
He doesn't gain by it, you know.
Right. So you're looking at Rashi,
he's doing him a favor. I think it turns out that he's doing him a favor.
Right.
Where the maskan is that he's doing his Baal Chayiv a favor so that his slave doesn't become...
How far have we gone nowadays, protesters? You know, I'm protesting and give me food, right? And give me not only food, I want vegan food, right, delivered.
Well, if they're Jews, then you have to give them kesudah shalomah b'shata. You can't just give them bread and water.
See, if you look in Rashi, the Ramaskol Noam Kresei, Rashi says that a slave is not worth the value, the volume of his stomach. Lechem acholo, he's not even worth the food that he eats. V'harini zano b'yom lachto, I'm feeding him on the day that he's working, and therefore there's no loss. I'm taking care of it. It's totally fair.
Yeah, I don't gain.
So Amar Lei, Rava, the son of Rav Yosef Bar Chama, responds to his father and says, "Emor damer Rav Nachman kegon dori avde the market beikuvi." Rav Nachman only made that statement about his own servant or someone like his own servant, like his servant Dari, which also relates to Pesach. It comes up in the Mishnah in Arei Pesachim. I think Rav Nachman says to Rav Nachman says to his servant Daru, he says, "If you have a master who frees his servants from servitude, then what should those servants do?" And he says they should say halal, they should praise the master. And Rav Nachman, I think, says, "Patarza mi lomar manishtana," that you've exempted us from having to say manishtana. So nice connection there between Rav Nachman and Daru. But so Rav Nachman only made that statement about the volume of the stomach of the Eved, and the Eved only being worth what he eats, about a servant like his servant Dari. Demarkid beikuvi, as Rashi says, leitzan haya umirakid b'chanuyo slishtos yayin. Daru was a very specific type of servant. He was basically a jester. He was a clown, and he used to go dance in stores in order to receive wine to drink. But Avdi Acharini mi Amar, did Rav Nachman really make such a statement about a normal Eved, an Eved who really produces a lot of work and who can really be beneficial to the person that he's working for? So Amar Lei, Rav Yosef Bar Chama responds, basically saying, yeah, you're right. This doesn't really fit with Rav Nachman. But Ana ki hadar of Daniel bar Rav Katina Amar Rav Svirli. I assume, like the statement of Daniel bar Rav Katina Amarav, who said, "De Amar Hatokev Avdo Shel Chaveiro VeAsaba Malacha Pater," that if one grabs the servant of his friend and does work with that servant, that he would be exempt. That there's not a problem with using the servant for work. Why? De Nechale De Lo Nistere Avde, because the owner of the servant is more than happy for the fact that the slave is not being batel, that he's not learning to just become idle, that he's not being, you know, unoccupied. The fact that he's busy working is always beneficial because he's at least training the Eved's work ethic and doing some sort of improvement to the Eved for the master in that way. So Rav Yosef Bar Chama ultimately says, I can't really justify my conduct based on Rav Nachman, but I at least can justify it based on Rav Daniel Bar Rav Kitina Marav, that it is in fact a benefit to the owner of the slave because the slave is remaining busy. So Amar Leh, Rava, again, the son of Rav Yosef Bar Chama, responds to his father and says, well, but Mar came in the Masik Behuzuzi, Michzi Karibis. He says, that's only true that you could rely on the statement of Daniel Bar Rav Kitina Marav in a case where you haven't lent money to the person. But you, Rav Yosef Bar Chama, my father, since you lent money to the people who own these slaves and they owe you money back, that looks like ribis. The Amar of Yosef Bar Manyumi, Amar of Nachman, because Rav Yosef Bar Manyumi, this statement, the discussion that we've been seeing until now, said that Afa Bijamnu Hadar Bechatzer Chaveiro Shalom Midaito Ein Otzarech La'alos La'uschar. Rav Yosef Bar Manyumi, Amar Rav Nachman said, even though generally we assume the rabbis taught us that if one lives in the courtyard of his friend without the knowledge of the owner of the courtyard, you don't have to pay the owner of the courtyard. Hilvo Bedar Bechatzero. If you lent money to the owner of the courtyard and then you go and live in the courtyard, then Sarech La'alos La'uschar. And you do have to give payment to the owner of the courtyard. So we see clearly that if you get a benefit from the borrower of money during or related to the term of the loan that you gave to him, that would be prohibited. And therefore, when you use the slaves of another person, even if it's a benefit to the owner of the slave because the slave is not becoming idle, or even in theory, we already dismissed it, but if you're not actually benefiting so much because the Eved isn't even worth what you have to feed him, still it should be Aser because it looks like Ribis. So Amar Leh, Hajri B. Rav Yosef Bar Chama responds to his son Rava, said, Nizchuni Bana, you won. I'm being Choser and I'm going to stop doing this practice.
So what kind of rice is here? It's Shalom Midato. You live in the Chas Shalom Midato. Here when you're grabbing the Eved, it's Midato.
But he doesn't care. It's his day off. And who knows? Why do you say it's midato?
No, I don't think we're saying it.
He would seize somebody. He would seize him. He wouldn't ask permission for.
But I don't think we're necessarily saying that this case is shalom midato. We're using Rav Yosef Bar Manyumi Amar of Nachman's statement to help us clarify
our case. But he's talking shalom midato.
No, he was referencing another case, which was Chazal generally said you're living in a person's courtyard, shalom midato. Then he's applying that principle, that case, to his specific case, which was what? Where you lent money to a person and then you're staying in that person's courtyard. So that could potentially be even Ledaito. But then I think all the more so in the case of Avadim, that would also be Ledaito, right? I don't think we're bound necessarily by Rios of Bamanyumi Amar Nachman, because again, he's quoting from this Sugyan Baba Kama Zenen Evzelu Chaser about living in somebody's courtyard Shalomi Daito. But he's applying it to a case where you lent money to somebody and then you're living in his courtyard. So unclear whether you're living in his courtyard Shalom Midaito. I think that could even be Midaito. But then also, when you're grabbing the Avadim of the owner, it could be that the owner doesn't know about it, but it could also be that the owner does know about it. Okay, I think we'll hold over here.
Thank you.